now stay tuned for To Your Health on WPVC LP Charlottesville, the show where food is on the table and center stage. To Your Health is brought to you by Hamilton's at First and Main, celebrating 20 years of sustainable fine dining on the downtown mall. Now here's your host, MC Blair.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Your Health. I'm MC Blair. I'm sitting here with Todd Niemeyer from UACC, the Urban Agricultural Collective of Charlottesville. Say hello, Todd.
Morning.
Hey. And we start off always with headlines. We have some really cool headlines here. The first one is new research finds organic food offers more superior health benefits than conventional food. It's a one-year research review commissioned by European Parliament Committee, and they confirm the benefits of organic food production for human health. Now, of course, we know that Europeans are generally a little slimmer, a little healthier than Americans, and most studies linking organic food don't have enough scientific controls to be viable, but consumers of organic food tend to have a healthy dietary pattern, so that's really good. They say the concrete distinctions in nutrition between organic and conventional crops were highlighted in the study, including a lower cadmium content in organic crops. Now, I didn't even know that was there. You know, I found out about cadmium. It's naturally occurring in the atmosphere, like arsenic and some of the other heavy metals. Well, at low levels for a long period of time, causes kidney, bone, lung damage. It's a known carcinogen, and it has a very low permissible exposure level. Unfortunately, it's found in fumes from waste plants, cigarettes, so don't smoke, and here's the big one, fertilizers, non-organic fertilizers. Well, all these conventional crops are grown with these fertilizers that contain cadmium, and so if you're buying conventional, good luck on that one. You know, I've had doctors say that everybody gets cancer. I don't think that has to be. I really don't. I believe that if, you know, because of things like cadmium and other heavy metals that are found in fertilizers, conventional fertilizers, maybe that's the reason. Maybe that's the reason, you know, that doctors say that. I don't know. It's just not a good thing. So you can remove this and other heavy metals by eating sulfur-rich foods like cruciferous, cabbage, red cabbage is the best, Brussels sprouts, sweet potatoes, broccoli, eggs, cauliflower, and sweet potatoes. That's how you can get rid of heavy metals, by eating sulfur-rich foods, which is great. And so that's, my diet contains a lot of those, the cruciferous fruits. And I would say, one of the reasons why I'm so healthy. Pretty cool. So we have another. School lunches across the U.S. may be moving towards healthy organic food. Now, boy, what was a typical school lunch back when, you know, it was like a gooey pizza, floppy fries, you know, right? and so they're moving towards the local pasture chicken and grass-fed beef burgers in several states. They have these the organic raised fruits and vegetables as an option, as an offering, and some are just going to it straight out. Getting grants to subsidize that. And, of course, that's good for the local farmers as well. So you've got healthier school lunches, which is great. Of course, here in Charlottesville, we have the Schoolyards Gardens. We have the UACC, as I mentioned before. And they're making a difference in our community, which is great. So you can contact these two groups. And, of course, Todd's going to tell you more about contacting his group and finding out how you can help. Of course, donating money is great, but volunteering a few hours each week is better, you know. So this is the way to get the community healthy and dramatically lower health care costs. and also trim your waistline. But lowering health care costs. So, you know, I've always said, well, gosh, if you have a family of four or five and, you know, you've got co-pays and insurance premiums and all this sort of things, and you go to the doctor three, four times a month total for the family, all those co-pays, what if you were healthy and you didn't have these things that you had to go to the doctor for, maybe once a year for a physical, and you took all the co-pays and extra doctor visits for drugs or whatever, money that you spent, and put that back into your food budget, well, maybe you could afford some real food, you know? So that's just something that that I found in my own life to be true. There's another thing in the United States going on. They say the U.S. can't kick its soda habit. Two-thirds of the children and half the adults report drinking at least one sugar-sweetened beverage a day. So I decided to look up the calories from sugar for all these things. So Coke, a 12-ounce Coke, has 140 calories. Well, they say that your calories from sugar should be about 10% at the most of your total diet. Well, 2,000 calorie a day diet, typical diet, you drink one Coke, you're already over that. A 20-ounce Coke is 240. Big gulp is 364, and a super big gulp is 512. So that's crazy, right? Mountain Dew, 290. Red Bull, 108. Not quite so bad. Vitamin water, 8-ounce vitamin water, 50. Sobe, 120. Arizona iced tea, 90. For the 8-ounce, 24-ounce, 270. Snapple, 8-ounce, 100. 16-ounce, 200. Minute Maid lemonade, 8-ounce, 140. 20-ounce, 260. Their OJ is 96 for the 8 and 192 for the 16. So you can see that we're getting a lot of sugar, calories from sugar, and some people don't even realize it. And if you had two or three, well, there's, you know, that's your whole 2,000 calorie a day, and all you've done is drank a few, you know, sugary drinks, and you haven't eaten any food yet. So it's kind of tough. It's kind of tough. Try to kick this habit. Wow. You know, I think what it does is it, I've heard that it actually stimulates the opioid receptors in your brain. And so anything that stimulates those, you can get addicted. That is addiction. That's physiological addiction. That's the definition of it. So that's what's going on. So some of the things we have to change. Now, I know that when people get educated and they produce things like food, like in a garden, they feel pride. They have a more sense of community and this type of thing. And I want to introduce, I've introduced Todd Niemeyer from UACC, the Urban Agricultural Collective of Charlottesville, and I'd like to bring him on now. So we'll talk about that.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, not a problem. We love it. So what exactly is UACC?
Yeah, so what is UACC? It's a group of people that share the belief that working together to grow and share healthy food helps cultivate a healthy community. Pretty simple, right? A little more complicated in the execution, but the premise is that when we collaborate together to do something positive in our neighborhood, and in this case, it's growing food together, and we get that food out to our neighbors, we're contributing to a healthier world, right? And in our case in particular, we the people that we primarily work with are living in lower income communities, okay? So most of the gardens that we operate are located in the Ridge Street neighborhood. And in the Ridge Street neighborhood, you find Friendship Court community, the 6th Street community, Crescent Hall, South 1st Street, okay? So those are all subsidized housing apartment complexes with lots and lots of people in them, lots and lots of people living on the margins economically. And so the idea was when this project first started, it mostly started as an idea of bringing people together And food was sort of the mode of doing that.
Right.
Of course, the side benefit to bringing people together to grow food is that you have this food. And so we were able to provide access to food for people who were struggling to afford healthy food, right? The cheapest food around is the stuff that, like you said, is full of sugar,
right.
Is conventionally grown, heavily processed food, right? That's what our government subsidizes.
I know.
We subsidize corn. We subsidize things like that. So trying to provide access to fresh, healthy food makes a huge difference because that's the stuff that costs the most, especially organic food. And we're not certified organic growers, but we try to follow the practices of organic farming, and everything we distribute is free of charge.
So we can talk about how
we do that, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So it's free. So how do you get? Do you go like door to door and say, "Hey, we got this garden here"? Or I mean, how does that work? How do you get the word out to the people?
Yeah, it's a great question. So we certainly also believe that when you're doing something from the grassroots in a community like we work in, the leadership and sort of growth of the organization has to come from the grassroots as well. Mm-hmm. So we have a board of directors. We're a nonprofit organization, so we have a board of directors. And that board is primarily made up of people who live in the communities that we serve. And that's for a number of reasons. One, we want to make sure that what we're doing is helpful to the people that we serve. But the other reason is, It's an amazing on-the-ground network of communication, right? So not everybody uses the same modes of communication. Not everybody's on Facebook or email or whatever, looking at all those things. So the best outreach for us is word of mouth. You right. hear it from your neighbor, that's the best way to learn about something that's going on, especially at a grassroots level in your neighborhood. So that's how it gets out there. Of course, we do a little bit of flyering and door knocking ourselves, but most of it spreads by word of mouth. And
wow.
we're trying to reach a specific audience, and,
right.
and that's the best way we've found to reach people.
You're right. That's exactly right. You're listening to Your Health here on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. And we're talking with Todd Niemeyer from the Urban Agricultural Collective of Charlottesville, UACC. Todd, you mentioned the social media. Do you get good responses from that?
We do, as long as I'm good enough about updating it. I'm absolutely terrible, but I don't use social media personally, but I do. UACC has a Facebook site and a website, but I spend much more time, interacting directly with people and being outside and doing things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to sort of make myself update our online presence. But we do have a fair number of people who engage with us via our email list, our Facebook page, and our website.
Oh, that's great. So if somebody wanted to volunteer or make a donation,
mm-hmm.
They just go to your site? That's
a great way to do it. Mm-hmm. So I can tell you the site. It's uacccville.wordpress.com.
Oh, okay.
It's the free site, so that's why we have the .wordpress in there.
Oh, right, of course, yeah.
But in any case, so uacccville, basically, .com. Or WordPress.com, and that'll get you there. We have a page if you're interested in volunteering. Tells you a little bit about how to do that. There's a contact page where you can sign up for our email list, which is a great way to stay in touch and find out what's coming up. And then, of course, if you would love to make a financial contribution, there's a place to do that as well through our partner. We have a partnership with Virginia Organizing, which is
another
great organization.
Yeah, they're one of our sponsors. We talk about that.
Great, yeah. We love what they do. We're a partner with them, and so you can make a donation through them. And, yes, financial support is crucial to making any of this happen. We have staff. We have overhead. We have all that stuff to deal with, just as any organization does. So, yeah.
So do you find, children or – Do you have students that help you, adults, probably everybody, right?
Yeah, it's such a mixed group of people that come out. People from all backgrounds find ways to plug in. And people approach us based on kind of their comfort zone. Mm-hmm. So, kids tend to be the most adventurous, right? We're out there doing stuff in their backyard. They're going to come check it out. They want to run the tiller. They want to dig a hole. They want to do everything, right? Yeah. Sometimes you got to go, slow down. You're going to chop your toes off. What I've found is that over the years in the community, obviously the population changes to some degree. There are some people who have been there a very long time. There are people who are there for a month and then they leave. So it's kind of constant relationship building and getting to know people. But there are people who have been with us, we're going into our 11th growing season, and there are people who have stuck with us through that entire 11 years because they believe in what we do. People who come out to the garden, kids are the first, right? They were the first when we started. They're still the first every summer and spring when we get going. Adults do come out. What I find is that for people living in the communities that we serve, the lower income communities that we serve, gardening is one of those things. It's a privileged thing. You know, it requires time. It requires a space to do it. And for the most part, you know, people have kind of busy, complicated lives in those communities. And so the idea of volunteering their time to garden is sort of a little bit sort of off the radar for them. It's a bit out of the comfort zone. Not to mention there's the dirt and there's the bugs, and people go, I don't know about that. And we'll get people to try it out, and, sure, and some people get hooked. Mm-hmm. Now, that said, there's a lot of people who live outside the communities that see what we're doing and believe in what we're doing and want to do something positive in the community. So we get volunteers, like you said, from schools, the university, or the surrounding neighborhoods. And so it's just a melting pot of people.
That is great.
When we actually do our distribution, we call it Market Day. Mm-hmm. We do a weekly, end-of-week Market Day where we distribute everything we grow free of charge. It's a community-based thing, so we shift it around between Crescent Halls and Friendship Court and other places. You see another group of people come out who want to help their neighbors with the distribution part. So people who may not feel comfortable out in the garden sweating in the heat come to be behind the table, help us unload the truck, and just interact with their neighbors and make sure that food gets distributed. So it's people plug in all sorts of ways.
That's
wonderful about it.
That's great. So do you see there's got to be like a sense of pride when they, especially at the harvest time, do you see that?
I especially I appreciate it most among the children that we work with, because if you spend everybody's, most of the kids we work at are elementary school age, and so they're going through the whole challenge of figuring out school and all the struggles that you deal with as a kid. And so what I like to do when people come out to the garden is try to find something that they can accomplish and complete and feel really good about, and then give them that sort of praise for it. And kids, kids light up because they're looking for approval. They're looking for that sense of, I can do it. And so I love that part of it. But I also see a lot of pride among people who are on our leadership team, for example, on our board of directors, the idea that, hey, wow, we produced 10,000 pounds of vegetables this year and served, 300 plus people.
Wow.
There's pride there, too.
That is great.
Yeah.
That's great. Well, we're going to take a little break here, and we'll be back with Todd Niemeyer from UACC. And we're back. To your health. To your health. This is MC Blair, and you're listening to Your Health at 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. And we're talking with Todd Niemeyer from UACC, the Urban Agricultural Collective of Charlottesville. And earlier we were talking before we came on, one of the gardens looks like it's just going to be plowed under, and they're going to be building some buildings and, so taking away that land. But then Todd came up with this great idea for using the buildings, I believe it was the rooftop. So I'd like to have him talk about that.
Okay, I'll try to...
The rooftop agriculture.
I'm going to bring it back a little bit because I think it deserves some context. Mm-hmm. So our biggest garden, and really it was sort of the flagship of what we do, is at Friendship Court. Used to be, for a long time, Charlottesville residents used to be called Garrett Square. It's downtown, a block away from the downtown mall. So Friendship Court is home to... I believe there's 150 households there, many more people, somewhere in the vicinity of 300 plus people, mostly single moms with children. and it's a subsidized housing community. And it is going to be one of the first communities, subsidized housing communities, to be redeveloped in the Ridge Street neighborhood, which is the heart of what the city is calling the strategic investment area, which is, well, like, what is that? Basically, and this is, I'm going to simplify this, I mean, the strategic investment area plan is this 250-page book that explains what's going to happen there, but the idea is that the city had the sense that this was an area that needed some revitalization. I'm trying to be careful with my words here because people feel very, very strongly about how this is presented. And in any case, what a component of that is the redevelopment of subsidized housing complexes like Friendship Court or 6th Street. So that has huge social ramifications. So when you're going to change the dynamic, not only the structural components of a building of a neighborhood, changing the buildings and all that, you're also disrupting lives and a network, a social network that may be invisible to somebody who's sitting in City Hall. Okay, I think they're thinking about that, but I think they got to think about it more because it's really, really important, especially given the historical context of our town. If we think about a place like Vinegar Hill, for example, that was demolished through what they called urban renewal, all right, back in the 60s, it displaced lots and lots of African American families in our town, and actually spawned the creation of places like West Haven and Friendship Court and 6th Street, all the subsidized housing communities that we know now. It basically forced people out of a community that they had grown up in into something completely different. And now, you know, however many years later, here we are in 2017, we're calling it redevelopment, and we're a little bit more socially conscious than we used to be, I hope.
Right.
But at the same time, the social ramifications of coming into a community and moving people and buildings and everything around, it's still there, right?
Right?
We still really have to take that into account. So that said, I mentioned that our biggest garden there at Friendship Court is going to be the first place to be redeveloped in that area. And what does redevelopment look like? Well, it means an increase in density. It means new buildings are going to be built. Old ones are going to be torn down. It may mean that roads that didn't used to go through the community are now going to go all the way through. For UACC, it also means that where the gardens currently exist, which is in a big open space at the corner of the property, they're going to have to go away for a while. Mm. Now, that said, we've been talking a lot with the current owners of the property, which is National Housing Trust Enterprise Preservation Corporation, giant name, NHT we'll call it, and Piedmont Housing Alliance, which is ELS co-owner, PHA, and they value what we're doing. They see the benefit, which we're lucky, right?
Yeah,
you hang around long enough, people start to realize, maybe they're doing something worthwhile. So they value what we're doing, and we're included in the long-term plan for the property. So there's going to be on-the-ground garden space, okay? Maybe a different shape and setup and all the things look totally different than what it does now. But that's okay. We're pleased that they see the value of what we're doing. But there's going to be a lot more buildings on site, and a lot more people, for that matter. It's 150 units now. They're talking upwards of maybe they said 480. Now they're talking about 600 units. So we're going up. We're going definitely going up, but we're also adding buildings. So all these buildings have rooftops.
Great.
And in the current drawings, they have flat rooftops.
Right.
So to the farmer's mind, that's like, that's growing space.
Sure.
How can we make that happen? So I've been in conversation with the Piedmont Housing Alliance, which is going to be the driver of redevelopment. They're in the plan here, they're going to take over, they're going to buy out their partner and be the primary owner of the property in the long run. And so they have the ultimate say about what's going to happen there. And so I've been talking with them and trying to sort of plant the seed, so to speak, the idea that let's use these rooftops to grow food. Let's use these rooftops not only to grow food to pass out for free. Let's see if we can do some intensive growth up there that we could then maybe market and provide jobs for people who are trying to climb the social ladder. Let's create not only a local source of food, but a local source of employment. And where else can we take that?
No, yes,
so that's where we're headed.
That's fabulous.
PHA is going to be, if they're listening, they're going, oh, no, he's not really talking about it on the radio, because they're a little bit hesitant about this. But we're I'm working with several partners right now to do the background research. I mean, I'm pretty comfortable growing stuff in dirt.
Sure.
Up on that roof is a whole other ballgame.
Weight, load bearing. Yeah.
Water. How do we manage water on a roof? Wind. It's a different scene. So I've got a lot to learn, but there are a lot of people who are excited about helping me figure it out.
That's great.
So we're gonna see where we can take this.
Just keep it moving.
And if it works there, you know, what we were talking earlier, you know, every big box store in the city has a flat roof.
Unbelievable.
What else could we do?
Yeah, exactly. You're listening to Your Health on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. We're talking to Todd Niemeyer from UACC, the Urban Agricultural Collective of Charlottesville. Todd, you used to work with Mike Clark out there in Standardsville, right?
I did for about a season.
Yeah. And so what about putting up a greenhouse? I mean, you know, like on the roof.
Yeah.
Is that something that could be done? Or
it could be. And you know, I have to say, you know, what Mike Clark is doing out at Planet Earth Diversified is pretty incredible. It's kind of the other end of the spectrum from what I know. I really know growing on the ground and in soil. What Mike is doing, he does some soil-based stuff, but he also does hydroponics. And I had the privilege of working with him for a little while, and I think that he would definitely be someone I would want to pull into this conversation once we get to the stage of PHA being willing to experiment with us.
Right.
Because I think when we talk about how much weight is going to be up on a roof and how to manage the water and maximizing production, if we actually want to turn this into something profitable that employs people, I think we have to think about greenhouses and year-round production, and then also what's the best system for being able to do things on a roof without having to cart a bunch of soil and waste and up and down and all that. There's so many things to consider here.
There are.
So,
you're right.
What he's doing is pretty revolutionary. I mean, pretty intelligent guy. I don't know if you've seen his operation, but it's like gardening in space over there.
I've been out there several times, and one of the things that I found most interesting is that he uses everything.
Yeah,
and he makes his own fuel for his to run the greenhouses, as well as all his vehicles.
Indeed,
you know, from the waste products, he just makes biofuel. And it's absolutely incredible. And if he may need some, he wanted a refrigerated truck. And so he priced all these refrigerated trucks and realized, that's too much. It's too expensive. So he built one. He made his own. And it's still going strong. It's absolutely amazing. So, you know, we do have people in this area, folks, that are on board with this. They're passionate about it. And that's why I firmly believe that down the road we could make a big dent in things like childhood diabetes and obesity, which would lower the overall health costs of the community. And so I want to ask you, have you seen any examples of some of these children or adults that have worked with you start to think differently about their health or about the way they eat, maybe cutting back on the sugar, you know, that we talked about earlier? Have you seen any of that or any indication?
Well, you know, I can only go by what people tell me, because I'm not in their homes and seeing what they eat. I definitely hear from people who say they try things that they wouldn't have eaten before because of what we're growing.
Mm-hmm.
Swiss chard being a great example. I love growing Swiss chard as a grower because it's one of those things that I can grow pretty much any time of the year, mm-hmm. and it's probably going to survive. Whereas some of the other favorites, you know, like kale and collards, there's certain times a year where they just get hammered by bugs and we lose them. But that's a great green that I can keep going every year. So I do know that people, because we're doing this in the community and giving people a chance to sample things, sometimes we'll have a chef come in and prepare something with it so they get a chance to taste it, right? Give them a recipe. People now use that, and so that's sort of adding to their nutritional repertoire, so to speak. You know, when I hear kids come out and who have come out for years say, you know, I want to kind of, how can I do this for a living? I want to be a farmer someday.
Wow.
Like, that's amazing.
It is amazing.
Yeah, and probably wouldn't have considered that if we weren't doing the same thing in the backyard, or doing that very thing in the backyard. So there are things like that. You know, in terms of overall health outcomes, it's one of those hard things to, you can't really track it because people aren't living in a bubble, you know,
right.
and not everybody makes it to every market day, and some people are with us for a year, and then they go off to another part of town for a while, and they come back, and so lives are always constantly ebbing and flowing and shifting around. So to do like a study, and I don't, you know, that's another thing about being sort of socially conscious about what we're doing, like kind of probing too deeply into people's lives, you don't want to be that intrusive, but at the same time, you're curious, right? You want to know, are we really having an effect? And so, you know, the ways that we find out these things are sort of qualitative surveys, like asking people, hey, do you feel, because we're out there growing this stuff in your community and distributing it, do you eat more vegetables? Yeah. Overwhelmingly, people say yes. You know, do you find that you, when market days are happening, you're able to provide healthier meals for your family? Yeah, absolutely. People say that. So we get that kind of qualitative feedback.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, but yeah, it's hard to measure it. I can't stick needles in people, and I don't want to.
So. Well, it's true. And we here at To Your Health on 94.7, we don't want to try to tell you, we're not going to judge. We're here to put the information out. You know, if you eat this isn't good. But if you do, it's okay. Go ahead, you know. So we're just trying to give you some information and then bring experts in to verify. I know last week we had Amy Leeser from she's a nurse practitioner out there at the Forest Lakes Medical Center. And she's into functional medicine, which, of course, is the whole body and the diet and the way everything relates to that. So it's folks like that, and we have a number of those kind of people here in Charlottesville. It's absolutely wonderful what's going on, and I know that you guys do you work at all with schoolyard gardens, or you do?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's one of the interesting things that's happened, say, over the past decade here in town, is that as more and more consciousness about the value of eating healthy food has grown, other organizations have popped up to work with people in different segments of our population to try to figure out how do we increase access and increase knowledge and all that, and increase skills in this regard in terms of growing your own food. And so City Schoolyard Garden is a great partner in that regard, in that they're working with some of the same kids that I see at Friendship Court or at 6th Street. They're seeing them in the school, which is fantastic, right? So it's kind of a double dose of the same message. And we recognize that and so have done some activities in partnership. But one of the other things we're realizing, and City Schoolyard Garden is just one, right? There's the International Rescue Committee, the IRC, has a program called New Roots, working with refugees who have an agricultural background to grow food that they like and then maybe make a little bit of income by selling it. I'm trying to think of all these other groups that are doing wonderful things in town. But suffice it to say that there are a lot of great groups out there doing similar work. And so by kind of uniting our voices and getting to know each other a little bit better, we're finding that there's a potential for greater impact on the overall food system, right? So I guess it's been maybe a year ago, 2 years ago, we started sitting down together, just one, get to know one another, two, to talk about what we're doing, and then to start exploring collaborative partnerships. And what morphed out of that was this collaborative organization we call the Charlottesville Food Justice Network.
Mm.
Okay, so there's a bit to unpack there.
Yeah.
What's food justice? I think we're still trying to figure it out, because I think that means a lot of different things to a lot of people. But the idea being that if we're all working towards similar goals, with the ultimate goal of creating a healthy and just community-based food system, right? And we're taking different approaches to get there, but we have that similar goal in mind. And so now what we're trying to look at is, how can we, as a collective voice, do things that have a greater impact not only in Charlottesville, but regionally and maybe nationally. It's an ongoing dialogue. And it takes, it's people working together, so it takes a while to figure each other out.
Well, it does, and one community at a time. And, I was reading about in Minneapolis, very similar operation to what you're doing on a much larger scale because they've been doing it for a long time.
Yeah.
And the people are so proud and there's so much more community and crime rates drop. Mm-hmm. All this kind of stuff happens. These are the ancillary things that happen when you get people doing something together.
Yeah.
And especially over food. That's huge because then they can take that home and they can eat it. And when they're eating it, it's like, well, I helped grow this. And man, oh, man,
So, exactly.
Yeah.
And it's a great unifier. Everybody eats.
It is. Exactly. It is.
Everybody eats.
And I think that if a family starts becoming healthier because they're eating this, they're making better choices for themselves, other families are going to say, well, what are you doing? Man, you guys are... You're not as sick as you were before. You're looking better. You're losing weight. You used to have type 2 diabetes, and now you don't. What's up? And then they tell them, and then next and next and next, a domino effect.
It's that grassroots momentum, right?
Exactly.
And it's better than any scientific statistic that we could talk about on the air. You could get this out of a book, and it could come from some great, researcher, physician, but it only hits home when your next door neighbor is seeing the positive results.
Well, that's exactly right.
That's
exactly right.
Yeah.
That's cool. Well, you're listening to Your Health 94.7 WPBC. We're going to take a little break. We're talking with Todd Niemeyer from UACC. Back after these messages. And you're back to Your Health at 94.7 WPBC. I'm MC Blair, and we're talking to Todd Niemeyer from UACC. Urban Agricultural Collective of Charlottesville.
I like the Unified.
The Unified is cool too, right? That's like I think out in California they have the Unified School Districts of wherever they happen to be. They call them that. And I, have researched the Edible Schoolyard Project started by Alice Waters out there, and it was adapted by the Unified School District of Berkeley in 99. So
that's we're catching up.
Yeah, exactly. But there's quite a few all over the country. If you Google that Edible Schoolyard Project, and you'll see all these dots all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually have one here as well. So it's exciting to see this movement going,
and it
is about food. And we mentioned food justice,
mm-hmm.
and I think that I know that. One of the things I just read about is the state of California is suing Monsanto for some pretty nefarious things that they've done with food I call it fake food, with all these chemical fertilizers, and we talked about cadmium before, and they have other heavy metals. So they're doing that. So they're rising up against the big ag, and that is just so important. And later on, right before we shut off, I'm going to talk to you listeners about how we can fight big ag, on a local level. It's pretty cool. But talking about food justice, and I know that's one of your passions, what is it?
Well, it's interesting because for a while there, it was a word that I didn't know what to do with. When I say that, I think the first time I heard people talking about food justice was more in an academic setting. It wasn't something that I had heard kind of in the community that I had worked with, right? I got a sense of what they were talking about, but for me it's always about how do the people that I'm working with kind of relate to what we're doing, and how is it valuable to them, and how do they want to what do they want to call it? Like, our work, people just say, we work together, we grow some food, and it's great. They're not thinking so much on the sort of esoteric, like, social justice level for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
Although I think that we're starting to realize that if we can think that way, there's a unifying aspect to that, especially with other organizations, and that's how we may be able to make broader impacts on the food system. So from access, food access we talked about, where UACC is growing food and providing it free of charge with the support of volunteers and donors, right, and all that stuff. And so access is one end of justice, right? So being able to access fresh, healthy food that isn't grown with lots of chemicals, yes, and so forth. That's one end of it. But what else is food justice? And it's gonna mean different things to different people. Let's talk about why access is difficult from one end, mm-hmm, right? Well, so fresh organic food is expensive. Why is it, right, expensive? Well, because to grow it, it's mostly grown by small growers who are buying organic seed, which is expensive, and so they sell it at a premium when they grow the final product, they sell it at a premium to the consumer, and so that's just the only way they can support themselves and their families and their business, by selling it at a higher price. Well, then you've got larger organic ag, which may be a little bit cheaper, but it's still charging at a premium because they can, because the organic label, it makes money.
Well, the certification, there are costs involved in that.
Yeah,
as well,
so, exactly. Yeah. So it's a higher cost process to begin with. While it's also a valuable thing from an environmental perspective, and from hopefully from a sustaining a small farm or a medium-sized farm to keep going, it's limiting in that it's a market that's not available to everyone. Mm-hmm. Okay, and so our industrial food system, which produces food maybe with with procedures and inputs that are less ecologically sound, it produces cheaper food. We're dependent on it because people who can't afford that organic food still need to eat.
That's true.
How do we shift that paradigm? How do we look at reforming the food system so that we can do things that are healthy for the people who are producing, so the agricultural workers get paid well and a living wage, and we're doing things that are ecologically responsible, but at the same time we can make sure that most people can afford it, or more people can afford what we're producing. And I don't have the answer to that.
Right, no,
but,
I understand.
But it's the thing that we're trying to explore with this idea of food justice.
Right.
Everywhere, from the ecological health of our planet to the social health and respecting people's ability to make choices to eat foods that are culturally appropriate, that things that they are comfortable with, that they grew up with, that if you're a refugee from a country in Africa and you come to the United States, I want to find the things that I'm comfortable and familiar with cooking and, mm-hmm, eating. How do we make that a priority? If I go to the grocery store and I only have a few dollars to spend, why can't I buy healthy food?
Right.
And serve my family and keep my family healthy and reduce my doctor bills.
Exactly.
All those things. So that's what we're talking about with food justice. So it's a huge topic.
It is a huge topic.
With no specific definition,
right,
but the idea being it's a movement to work towards a healthier, more robust and just food system for all people.
But that's a good way to say it quite frankly.
It's still probably leaving
it's
something
still
out,
leaving
I'll tell
something
you.
Out, right? and the more you work with it, the more you'll find out what needs to be said.
Exactly.
So, but you're listening to Your Health here. I'm MC Blair, WPVC 94.7. We're talking with Todd Niemeyer from UACC, the Urban Agricultural Collective of Charlottesville. And we're talking about things like food justice and how we can get healthy food to the masses. And then there's other ways to do it as well. So one of the things that you mentioned earlier, you touched on it, were these veterans coming back and finding a reason to get up in the morning because they have to grow something. They their family depends on them growing, getting in the garden and growing. And so using these ways, to have these urban farms, then they can employ the veterans to come out, and it's they're finding a much lower rate of PST, post-traumatic stress syndrome. PTSD.
PTSD.
That's it.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're finding lower rates of that when these guys and gals go out and and do agriculture.
That's great to know.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, you would figure, because before they would just sit around, and some of them, you know, had very traumatic experiences in Iraq and Afghanistan and Pakistan, and so they're depressed and, you know, no reason to get up. Well, this gives them a reason to get up, and they've got to grow, and they, you know, so this is something that is being done around the country.
Oh, that's great to know.
In the same vein as what you're doing.
Yeah.
They're employing these veterans, which is just great. I mean, that's just a wonderful thing, and it's way less expensive than, you know, doctors and you know, psychologists and all that sort of thing that they would have to go to in counseling. But so what? It's like a cornucopia.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. There's so many invisible benefits, I guess you could say,
yeah.
or not immediately obvious benefits. And I agree. I think that, you know, one of the things that UACC is working towards is how do we grow this, what we're doing, into something that employs people. You know, we're working in low income neighborhoods. We're working with people who are in need of good jobs, people where they feel respected, where there's flexibility, because they, you know, for example, I work with one person right now who, she's a single mom, she has four kids, and she works in the garden with me during the season. She works seasonally with me right now, because we're still kind of trying to grow it to the point where we can employ her more. But even if I can offer full-time employment, sometimes she just can't work all those hours, because with four kids, when you're by yourself, stuff happens all the time.
Absolutely.
People get sick, people get in trouble, whatever. And so what the hope was, that we could provide a job that was easy to get to. It's right, you just walk out the back door and you're at the garden. But also an environment where we said, okay, we hear you. You know, it's tough being a single mom with kids, and we're going to work with you when dilemmas happen. We're not going to say, you're 10 minutes late, you're out. You know, we don't care why. You know, it's not that way. Or, you know, there's something happened today, I need to take the day off to be with one of my kids. That's okay. We can work with you. And so I think creating those places where people can work into things and climb up and find their place is really crucial. So we're aiming towards that as well.
And
expand and create more opportunities where people can have flexible employment and then support one another within the organization to work even better.
Absolutely.
So
what... it's almost like an intern program, if you will.
Yeah, kind of.
Except that you can pay them.
Yeah, that's the hope.
which is great. And so right now, of course, it is seasonal.
Yeah.
Down the road, we were talking about greenhouses.
Yeah.
You get greenhouses now, you're year-round, right. So that would provide more jobs.
Yep.
And justice through food.
Right.
So that's part of food justice.
Yeah.
That's another
economic justice.
Yeah.
Right?
Economic. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the sense of community.
Yeah.
Working together, just amazing.
And if you talk about the social justice end of it, you know, so, you know, I'm in a kind of a funny position, right? I'm this white middle class guy from the Midwest who showed up in Virginia following his wife, and here I am in Charlottesville. I'm like, oh, I bring these skills. I have some agricultural skills. I have some organizing skills. What am I going to do with myself? You know, I was lucky enough to get in on the sort of groundbreaking of this project, and got to make some connections through, on the coattails of some people who are very well connected. Karen Waters was the original director of the Quality Community Council, which was what spurred this project, and she built an immense network of relationships in the neighborhood, and that's how I came in here. Because otherwise, if I just showed up and said, I want to do a garden in your backyard, people would look at me like crazy, right? And
right.
I don't have really the right to do that. And so the reason we're doing this is because people invited us to be there in the first place. And so I take that very seriously, and I reflect on it a lot, in the sense that, you know, there's a power dynamic, right? Especially among race, with a racial context, mm-hmm. right? There's a black and white power dynamic here in Charlottesville that still exists. It's not as obvious as it used to be, say, you know, in the 50s and 60s, but it's still there. And so, making sure that The ultimate decision-making and power of how UACC grows and morphs is in the hands of people who are being served by it and who live right where the gardens are located. That to me is crucial. Like if we forget and just start driving ahead with these kind of rooftop ideas and they're not supported by the community, then it's not going to work.
It won't work.
It exactly. won't work, and it's an insult to the people that we're working with. So yeah. for me, it may take a while to get these things off the ground, but that's doing it gradually and slowly, and taking a few steps forward, and then taking a reflective step backward. That's absolutely essential to making any of this work.
Oh, you're right. You're absolutely right. Wow. You're listening to Your Health. Here on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. We're talking with Todd Niemeyer from UACC, the Urban Agricultural Collective of Charlottesville. And I wanted to tell you guys out there in radio land, there are ways you can fight big ag. One of the ways, of course, is getting with UACC, your schoolyard gardens, and helping out and getting some of those fruits, you know, growing your own veggies. But you can boycott brands that are on the wrong side of the lobby, like ConAgra, Kellogg's, General Mills. All of them are associated with Monsanto seeds. You can use an app. It's called Buycott, BUYCOTT, and it will give you all those labels that, you know, you should stay away from if you want to help fight big ag. Read the labels. Be wary of them. This term natural on packaging sometimes doesn't really mean anything. There's no legal definition of natural. They say that one of the main goals of the cereal scorecard was exposing the duplicity of some major natural brands that were charging more than some certified organic cereal. How about that? So they were charging more for less. We talk about organic food and how it's a little more expensive for obvious reasons, and that's justified. But now you have something that they put natural on it, doesn't mean anything, and then they end up charging more than something that's actually good for you. You can call your congressional representative and let them know that the issue matters to you. Calls do wonders. They really do, and the numbers are easy to find. There's a petition that says ban systematic pesticide use in the United States. That's a petition that's out there. Just stay informed. Check in with the organic authority or some other reputable source of information. They have the Environmental Working Group, the Cornucopia Institute, and the Pesticide Action Network for updates. These are the ways that we can, as a community, as a person, one single person, can help fight big ag. And that, to me, is just so important. It really is. You know, they're keeping us sick, folks. They are. And we have a way of fighting back. And through things like UACC and schoolyard gardens, we can eventually feed this community. I believe that with everything that's in me, because as Todd was saying earlier, you know, one family gets a little healthier, then the next thing, and the next, and the next, and pretty soon you have this movement, and people are getting on board. I think that people are going to just generally gravitate away from these high sugary drinks, especially when they see that real food is available to them, and that makes them healthier, and they feel better because maybe they helped raise it, or they know somebody who helped grow it. And that's just going to, just natural to get away from these things. It's amazing. Well, we're about out of time here on To Your Health, and like to say next week we'll have Alexander Olison from UVA, and he's got a system how we can grow our own vegetables right there in our house or on our porch. So be sure and listen next week to Your Health. Thanks again for tuning in, folks.
You've been listening to Your Health with your host, MC Blair. To Your Health is brought to you by Hamilton's at First and Main, celebrating 20 years of sustainable fine dining on the downtown mall. Be listening again next Saturday at 11 for To Your Health. The show is produced by Ben Chambers, production assistance from Mike Friend.